Welcome to you all, listening at home or listening here. Now, I know most of the faces, but not you.
And I belong to Laura.
You belong to Laura. Okay, perfect. Well, you can't have too many grandmas. You can't have too many granddaddies, though. Well, let us together sing first the Psalter. So, I'd like to choose Psalter this evening, if you don't mind. 383. In that psalm, David really expresses his trust in the Lord, and is really also dealing with a lot of difficulties in his life. One of them certainly could be grief. And I always found this psalter a very hard one to sing when I went through the journey of my grief, especially because that statement in the second verse, "Before into being I was brought, thy eye did see. And in thy thought my life and all its perfect plan was ordered ere my days began." Especially that perfect. That can be an issue of great contention when we go through journeys that we won't anticipate. So let's sing 1 and 2.
All that I am, I owe to thee. Thy wisdom, Lord, has fashioned me. I give my Maker thankful praise, whose wondrous work my soul amazed. Ere into being I was brought, thy eye did see me, and in thy thought my life in all its perfect plan was ordered ere my days began.
And from the scripture, I would like to read from Genesis 49, the last verse, and then the first 15 verses of Genesis 50. And it deals with the death of Jacob. And it's quite an interesting passage, really, dealing with the mourning. So when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed, and he yielded up the ghost, and he was gathered unto the people. And Joseph fell upon his father's face, and he wept upon him, and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. And the physicians embalmed Israel. And that process took 40 days. So 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so are fulfilled the days of those who were embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. How many days is that, Miles? 70 days. That's a number you don't know, huh? 70 days. They mourned for 70 days in this culture. And when his days of his mourning were past, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, "If now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, Lo, I die. In my grave which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, there shalt thou bury me. Now therefore let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again." And Pharaoh said, "Go up, and bury thy father, according as he's made thee swear." And Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, and all the house of Joseph and his brethren and his father's house. Only their little ones and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. And when they went up with him, both chariots and horsemen, it was a very great company. And they came to the threshing floor of Adad, which is beyond Jordan. And there they mourned with great and very sore lamentation. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. Again, a time of mourning. This is now 77 days, minus the traveling time. And when the Egyptians of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning in the floor of Etad, they said, "This is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians." Wherefore the name of it was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan. And his sons did according as he commanded them. For his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of a burying place of Ephron the Hittite before Mamre. And then they returned into Egypt after they had buried his father in this way. So, let's together seek the Lord's blessing as we... O God in heaven, Thou who art the Lord of life and death, it is Thou who determines our beginnings and ending on this journey of life here on earth. And Lord, we all know and we all have experience in family circles or in our closest family life what it is to lose loved ones. It will all cross our path or has done so already. And we gather here tonight to also look at that subject together and pray that it may please Thee to help us to understand also the normal process of grieving. And particularly, Lord, in our church family, we are going through this journey, and especially Kay and her children, in the loss of Brian shortly ago. And we pray that as we together also share with them this journey of grief, that, Lord, Thou would equip us also as we stand around families and loved ones or even colleagues and co-workers that go through the journey of grief, that Thou would equip us to be much more capable of walking with them in this journey. So, gracious Lord, will Thou comfort us and strengthen us all in the only way in which death also may become meaningful. And as if we may be Thine. For then Thou said in Thy word that death is no more an ending, but truly a beginning, a passageway into the eternal life. And we pray also that that comfort may be given to us in a personal way. Hear us now and remember us all those that are listening in other places. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, as you're used to it, of course, you always get some paperwork from me. And here's just a little booklet that kind of outlines the talk that I have tonight. So if you pass those on to the back. Just take one. And if you need pens, if you didn't have any pens, this church collects pens. It's always in this drawer, so you see. Huh? You need one? How about you pass them out to the back, the whole stack, okay? Genesis 49, last verse, and 50, the first verses. Is there a booklet left so I can at least follow along with my own outline? Now, well, thank you for coming tonight. And what I'm not going to do tonight is deal really with the issue of life and death in a spiritual way. Obviously, that's is an important subject, but we deal with that in our sermons on Sunday. So I will not deal with the spiritual benefits or the you know, the reasons why there is suffering and death, I assume that for a moment all to be understood. I just reminded of you that in the very beginning of the outline, that there's two verses. Man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upwards. It's unavoidable. You and I are going to meet with loss, with grief, with death, with losses all kinds of ways. Of course, not only death. That's the ultimate and you'd say the most invasive loss. But there's many other losses as we'll look at tonight. And that's unavoidable. We can push it away. We can try to avoid it in our thinking. It's not healthy. Take the day as it is, because it could be the last day you have it with your loved ones. That's a much more healthy way to live, a much more realistic way to live. It also makes a lot better use of the days you have. And never leave without a hug. Or never leave in a conflict, because you don't know if you see each other again at the end of the day. So brief and so fragile is life. And we all know that. I'm not telling you anything new. But that's a reminder. Sin and death came into the world, as Scripture says, death came into the world by sin. And that is all that I want to say on that subject. What really the subject is tonight is a much more practical approach to looking at grief and giving you some understanding of it so you can understand those who go through grief. Maybe it will help the Capesville family understanding a little bit what they're going through this moment themselves. And it will also help you to be a much more meaningful and understanding coach for those who do go to grief in your circle of family or circle of friends. Most of you know my own history, of course. I've been through this journey, mostly with the grief that I went through with my father at a young age. I was 19. Then my wife when I was, 34, I think, 35. So, gone through grief, again in a whole different way with the tremendous loss that we experience with Kim. Gone through grief twice in a whole different way. Perhaps you never recognize that as grief, but moving from Kalamazoo to New Zealand and moving from New Zealand to Waupun, it's a grief journey. Don't mean that to say it was so bad to get here, but I had to leave a lot behind. It was very dear and precious. And ties are cut, and so you go to grief again. So grief comes up in a whole lot of different ways through life. And it has a lot of similar feelings. And has a lot of similar reactions. Though, of course, the most intense grief is as you lose loved ones through death. Now, one author who you may have heard of, Lewis, he lost his wife all of a sudden. And he said, if only someone would have told me how hard it is to lose a loved one. Now, I understand that statement, but nobody can tell you that. Nobody can understand that unless you lose one. And so we will always be in some way unprepared for what grief really is until you go through it. Even if you see it coming. As you know, your family have seen, and I saw it coming as well, it still remains a rather unprepared moment for you. Now, understanding the nature of grief is understanding what a crisis is all about. And I just try to move as fast as I can, but if I go too fast, you please do not hesitate to ask a question in the middle of it, then we can stop and deal with it. But what is now grief? Has much to do with understanding what the nature of a crisis is. The word crisis comes from our Greek word krisis, and literally would translate as turning point or an intersection. A crisis is an intersection or a turning point. In which all of a sudden we deal with a reality that is completely unexpected or unanticipated or perhaps anticipated but unprepared. And the best way for you to look at that, what a crisis is this. Here's a picture of your normal life. It goes on every day. We just live and we live stable and, you know, obviously we have our ups and downs and our troubles and trials. But everything is just going to go nicely. This is what our life looks like. But now if all of a sudden something happens, like a death of a spouse, of a child, or you all of a sudden get the message that you have cancer, Or you get the message that, your loved one goes to jail. Right? What happens now? Your life looks like this. Now, that's not a very stable place to be on. There's a little tippy top, is it? That's what a crisis is. A crisis is a turning point. And now I can fall to this side. I can grow through it. I can improve through it. Or I can fall to the other side and I become decreased. I can lose through it and all my life long would cope with losses and cannot deal with it. Now, everybody will. Everybody falls either to the positive or to the negative side. Everyone. Because you can't live like this. Now, what is important is that the support people around, the structure around, also your preparation before it perhaps, have all to do with falling in your crisis towards the growth side. That when you look back later at this terrible event in your life, you might say what I say today. Yes, in some way I wish I would have never experienced it. But also I would never want to miss what I've learned through it. That's what I can say today. I could not say that when I was on my tippy toe. Right? But now looking back and having learned through it, I says, yes, I believe my life has been enriched through the catastrophic loss. Sounds completely bizarre when you listen to me now and say, oh, I don't understand that. How can you say that? But so it is, and so often is it experienced by those who grow to grief. Now, so grief is a turning point, to the right, to the wrong. The second statement is that any crisis calls for an adjustment or for changes. And that adjustment is the grief. It's a whole new reality. My husband is gone, my wife is gone. My child is gone. I deal with sickness, in terminal sickness, handicapped daughter, handicapped myself, lose my job. Believe it or not, retirement brings some crisis with you when all of a sudden your company says, I don't want you anymore. A lot of people go through crisis then. You heard about the midlife crisis? Yeah, I think I'm in it right now. I'm not sure how it feels like. But supposedly in the 50s you get to that, right? But that's a crisis because now I begin to realize my age is catching up on me, my possibilities of health and so on. And so, what does that call for? An adjustment. That adjustment is grief. That evokes feelings, emotions, reactions. That adjustment is simply what grief is. So each loss is experienced with grief. I already mentioned to you that losing a loved one all at once is like an atomic bomb. So catastrophic. No preparation. You part in the morning and you come home and he or she or the child is no more there. That's catastrophic. Nobody prepares for that. That's a completely different story for those who have gone through a slow dying process as you capsules have gone through and as I went through. It's like a slow drying up. It's like a drought. An all long journey of seeing it coming. Yeah? What's easier? I don't know what's easier. I think none of them are easy. Don't compare them. The losses are the same except they come in different ways. Losing of health, severe disabilities, an ailing spouse. Like I said, moving. Now, how many of you have moved here? Yeah, maybe from house to house to house in Wisconsin or even in Waupun. You don't experience that much grief, although sometimes you may because you leave your parental home or whatever. But Michelle and I have experienced tremendous grief going through our process now. How long did it take me to get? When people ask me, are you settled in Wisconsin? How long do you think it took me to settle here in Wisconsin? I am still settling in, correct. Now, what does that mean? That's still a grieving process of letting go of all these ties you've had for 15 years with a whole bunch of kids and grandkids on the other side of the world. That's a grieving process. Now, it can make me very depressed, unenergetic, you know, all the things that a griever goes through. You could go through when you have an international move like that. Yeah? So please recognize it. The people that you are around may be grieving even though there's no death. That could be a different kind of grieving or a different kind of loss. Now, secondly, what is grief and what's the purpose of grief? Grief is a completely natural and a normal response to a loss. The moment the loss is experienced, the moment grief is beginning. Because if you keep in mind that grief is an adjustment to a new situation, I have to find my place. I have to find my relationship to this problem. I have to find how my life is going to go on without this, what I have now lost. That's instantly happening in your thoughts or perhaps even in a very natural and physical way. So grief is far more than just feeling sad. Feeling sad is, of course, a big part of grief. But it's also even more than just having pain. It is a physical thing. Grief is a social thing. Grief is a spiritual thing. Grief is an emotional thing. Grief is not only in your heart, grief is in your muscles. Grief is not only in your head, it's in your stomach. It affects every aspect of our life. And just recognizing that, it affects your thinking. It affects your perception. It can affect, depending on the intensity, of course, your ability to cope. And therefore, my second statement, that grievers, as they go through this grief, sometimes worry they're losing their mind. They can't think straight. They can't add things up. They don't make sense to themselves. But they're not losing their mind. They're putting the big pieces of the puzzle together, and they can't often not find the missing pieces. Because it's such a chaos within that they're just looking to find sense in the chaos. And therefore, you may feel very disorganized, and a griever may think very irrationally. When you listen to their stories, they don't often make sense. Especially in the beginning. They don't add the things together in the right way. They don't go orderly and chronologically even. Doesn't really matter. If you hear that, and if you notice that, and you're standing a little farther outside of this circle of grief, just don't even correct that. This is a person who's sorting out the chaos of feelings and emotions and adjustments. And all you need to do is to recognize this is a normal part of grief. It takes a long time for some, more for others, shorter. Yes, sometimes grief is so overwhelming that death is preferred. Or emotional numbness is experienced. Who am I thinking of in the Bible who preferred death after a while? A godly man. Job. He is so unbelievably drained and so confused, he preferred to die. He wished he died on his birth. This is a godly man. That's how far I can go in grief. And Job is not the only one. Sometimes you can lose so much of the joy of life that you say it's no point living. And like I said, not only is it sometimes so emotionally overwhelming, sometimes it's also such an emotional numbness. Tears run out after time. You know, at the beginning there's lots of tears. In the end you feel like there's not a tear left in your tear duct. And I always say that tears can turn into brine and that just burns within. I think that's David says, while the fire burned or mused within. Right? That's emotional numb and yet emotionally very much in pain. You may still know that or not, but grieving, of course, is a chemical thing as well. Yeah, I'm not going to the chemistry, but you and I are chemistry factories, aren't we? This brain is all chemistry, they say. Noodles and chemistry. You know, when I sat next to a professor of chemistry once from New Zealand, I had a really interesting and long talk to him from New Zealand all the way to Auckland, to LA. And he was a chemistry man. And he did all kinds of brain research. So he kept on saying, you know, oh, the brain is all chemistry. So finally I asked him, is it only chemistry? Can you explain the brain only by chemistry? He says, no. I says, okay, then what is that? What then explains the brain? He says, I don't want to answer that. We know the answer, right? He didn't want to say that it was God. But it was more to more to the brain than chemistry. But grief is also chemistry. If I take tears of joy, and I take tears of grief, and I lay them under the microscope, they're radically different. The tears of grief are shedding the harmful chemicals in your bloodstream through your tears. And that's how they get out. That's why I think the Jewish people were really great doing that. They were mourning and mourning. They mourned for 70 days. They allowed themselves to cry. They even hired people to cry. Now, why do you think they hired people to cry? It helps the others that are feeling like crying to cry. Yeah, if we're sitting here all stone silent and someone feels really sad, what is that person going to do? I'm not going to cry. Right? Now, what does that do? It heaps up the harmful chemicals, which are antidepressants. God meant those to be released through your tears, biologically. So that's, I think, why the Jewish culture are still doing it. They hire the wailers to come so that the real grievers can very spontaneously grieve without everybody noticing them. And you notice how long the time they took for that? They were not embarrassed to take 70 days to mourn. What does our society say? Let's get over it. Let's get over it. Wrong. God made grief a natural process for you to deal with the new reality and to learn how to deal with it. So see, grieving process is to the heart what the healing is to the body. Now when you cut your skin, now what are we going to do when somebody cuts his skin or breaks his leg? Now we're going to support him, we're going to bandage it, clean it out, put a splint around it, cast around it, and we don't think anything wrong of surrounding that person with all the medical and all the support care. Well, grief needs the same thing. It's not so visible. It's a mental thing. But a griever also needs that support, that care, that love as they go through the journey of grief. So give them that time. Now, number D, important for us to all remember, something that I think UK and the children are beginning to realize, that grief always is cumulative. That means it grows and it grows bigger and bigger as time goes on, especially in the first year. It can take more than a year. And why is that? Because losing a loved one is the primary loss. But that loved one is connected with 100 strings to other aspects of your life. And it's only as these years or months go on that you begin to discover the other dimensions of the loss of the person that you lost. So therefore, grief always grows worse rather than better. Because every time you have a new dimension of, oh, yeah, that's right, that's what he used to do, that's what she used to do. And everywhere you meet that. Now it's important for us to remember, because the tears may get less, the visibleness of it may get less. And we as surrounders, well, our life moves on and we forget about the griever. It seems like they're doing okay. Right? They seem like they're doing okay. But they're not necessarily doing okay. But they notice that the environment is not anymore so occupied with it. And therefore they feel less and less open to share the grief. But really, for the griever, I always say, the real journey of grief begins when everybody else moves on. That's when the real journey begins. And so be aware of that as we have grievers in our midst, how that goes. And as the time goes on, you know, I have a little packet with a few outlines or a few handouts for you to take along afterwards. It's not a huge pack, but this is probably one of the nicest pictures of the grief journey. It's called the Grief Valley. And you'll have various things listed in this journey. But here's the grief starting, and we go down into this valley. And we experience all these various feelings and emotions and adjustments. And then it's going to take time to get out of that valley again. To get here in the place where you begin to reinvest and reintegrate the loss into your life. And it becomes a part of your life. Now this journey, everybody goes through that in a different speed, in a different manner. Yeah, but that's an important outline to look at sometime on your own. Now, grief is never open. It is never over. It erupts less often. It erupts on the strangest moment. Grief can be erupted by smell. All of a sudden, you smell something and it just associates you with the loved one and you find yourself in a puddle. Grief can be start by sight, or by a comment, even by a sentence or a word that a person said, all of a sudden again makes you realize. So it's never over, and in these beginning phases, of course, this grief is constantly a part of your life, but it still keeps on erupting. When I just went through the grief journey of Brian with you, I sat in my own study working on the funeral and I was weeping again. Obviously about Brian, but also about my own loss. Sometimes it just comes back for a moment. How many years is that ago now? 18 years or so that my wife is gone. It's still there. Because grief never goes away entirely. It becomes part of you. And at certain moments in your life, it just comes back out again. Best way to illustrate it, especially, I went to a seminar when I was in my grief journey before my wife passed away, particularly to help children through grief. And the presenter gave us this really awesome presentation. One of the things I'll never forget, he says, I'm going to illustrate to you what grief is, and I will not do it in your midst, but I will just tell you the story. He took this piece of paper and said, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to just walk among you and I want you to observe. I want you to think. I want you to travel with me. So here we're sitting with, 25 people. And here he starts walking with this piece of paper, which wrote, death and loss. So this is his loss. And he starts walking and he's walking in our midst. So you picture that. This man, you can see his whole face. What's he trying to do? Just get rid of this thing. It's clinging to him badly, right? He wants to shake it off. And the more he walks among us, and we sit there like statues, we didn't know what to do. We just sit there looking at this guy, going like this. And all of a sudden, someone clued in. As he's walking among us, what is he doing? What's he asking? Yeah. Help me, right? Help me. I want to get rid of this. And so we finally started grabbing that piece of paper and started pulling on it. Now, this paper doesn't tear so quick, but every time as somebody else took a piece, it tore off a little piece, right? So he's getting this piece in his hand, it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And after a while, he had only this piece left, and then he did something, and I was weeping in that classroom. He took this piece of paper and he went to the corner of the classroom and he stood there like this, with his back towards us, and all I saw was this. Now, I'm sure that Kay and the family know what I'm doing, right? Anyway, he tore that whole piece of paper and he came out of that corner with this little piece. And then he stuck it in his pocket. Now, if you've gone through grief, you know what I mean. This piece of paper is going to be always in my pocket. All the rest of my life. There are times it comes up and I'm weeping. I tuck it back again. Anniversaries, birthdays, marriage days, other special days. It's always there. It's going to be part of you the rest of your life. Now, but look at that journey that it took me to get rid of this big hunk, make it a small hunk. That's the journey of grief. Depending on how many people are helping you, how much you have of your own ability to deal with it, that all differs in terms of how much grief will be dealt with well. Now, question F, not much on that. I've done this topic a lot for teachers. So just be aware that children grieve totally different than adults. And kids are often the forgotten mourners because they don't talk about it. They don't show it very well. But children do really grieve deeply. And often they delay their grief, or they deal with grief in a whole different way. For example, if you tell a child that is young that his grandpa just died, the first thing he might say, okay, can I go biking now? He said, didn't you hear what I said? Grandpa died. Yeah, can I go biking now? Now, why did you say that? That's his way of coping. He's heard it. He's planted it. He's going to play. And what does he do when he plays? Takes it out, put it back. Takes it out, put it back. That's how kids are. They become noisy. They become busy. They don't seem to, doesn't penetrate them, but believe me, they're dealing with it. But they're dealing with it in a child's way. And sometimes I wish we could be like them a little bit. Right? You can just park it and deal with it. But they have also different ways of thinking depending on the age. Some kids are magical in their thinking, especially when they're young. What do I mean with magical? Well, mommy is sick because I really was a naughty boy last week. Kids have that real quick. Johnny in school died because we did not let him play with us in recess time. That's magical thinking. But for kids, really real. They make these very strange connections. Literal thinking. You know, when we say, yeah, we lost grandpa. Well, can we go get him? Can we find him? That's literal. Right? When people come out of the closet, we know what that means. Well, they're going to be afraid of closets now. Because what can come out of my closet? So that's literal. Grandma went to sleep. Don't say that. Grandma didn't go to sleep. Grandma died. Because sleep is... I don't want to go to sleep because grandma went to sleep. So kids think that way. And depending on their age, you have to really, really think, how you say it. And I always say, when you deal with kids, please tell them the facts. Don't make nice sounding words because they don't understand them. They like straight forward facts. As much as they can handle is what they ask. What they ask is what they can handle. What they don't ask, you don't need to tell them. So sometimes kids have fantasy thinking. They often think that death is reversible, or they can think that death is contagious. And so again, we need factual information. Sometimes parents say, I'm not going to tell them all the facts about the child, about the disease of mom or the disease of dad or so on. It's wrong. The more information you give, the less fear the child has. So when Melanie went through her sickness, I informed my children, the older ones, the three older ones, of everything that the doctor said was going to probably happen with mom. The facts. That made my children far more relaxed. As they sat with her and talked to her, nothing was a surprise. Yeah, so please give them the facts that they can handle and deal with. Egocentric thinking, of course, is very typical for children. Their world is there. Very small. Everything circles around them. And in children, you see often regressive behavior. That they go back to bedwetting again, and they go back to their blankies, and may become aggressive. Now, the last thing, do not think that grieving should not be found in a strong believer in God. I heard one minister say some years ago in a talk that I was attending, he says, you know, he said it to a person who lost a loved one. He says, well, look, even though you're alone, it can become so good. Like Adam in paradise also was alone. It was well meant. It was very well meant. But I did go to him and says, look, you're completely wrong about that. The aloneness of Adam in paradise is a completely different aloneness of a widower in a sinful world today. Yes, he was alone, but he had a good relationship with God. He didn't even know what he lost because he never knew what it was to have a wife. So don't say that it can be as good when God comes. You know, Adam had God, and yet Adam was lonely. So he had the best spiritual relationship that could be ever possible, but he still was lonely. Because we are people, and we need to have a social relationship with people. And so grieving is completely compatible with being a strong believer. Yeah? Nothing is there wrong with that. Now, I know there is coffee. You want to quickly grab a cup of coffee? Then I can grab a cup of water. And then we'll go on to the second section. Yeah, you want to do it now or do you want to move on? It's up to you. Some of you look a little sleepy. I know it's been a long day. Okay. Now, we were just informed that if you speak, it will still be heard on the mic. But let that not discourage you from speaking and asking questions or making contributions. You know, there are, as I look over this assembly, well, there are more grievers here who have gone through that. I mean, we have Kate and Jean. You've gone through the loss of a child. You've gone through the loss of your father. You know, lost a child too. So, you know, here we are together in a small group like this, and look how many of us already have gone through, you know, the grief, not just of parents. I mean, that's obviously all of us are going to experience that. Not all of us will experience that we lose a spouse in midlife or that we lose a child in young age. But look, in this small group, how many there are already who have experienced that? So you'd be amazed how many people go through the grief journey and don't do well. We see people not functioning well in society. We see people that are completely oversized in terms of their body. We see people who are into drugs. We see people who are into excessive buying and selling or in just, you know, reckless behavior. Know that there is usually a huge story behind these lives that make these people not function well. Maybe one of the things that you take along from this subject tonight is that we need to be so far less judgmental when we look at people's lives, because you don't know what lies behind their lives' story that makes them act like this. So compassion and understanding. Now, the second section or the third section here, the common grief experience, is just real brief. I mean, this could be an extensive subject, but we're here just lay people and I'm just a lay person. So just the grief journey has some common experiences, but everyone who goes through grief will react greatly different depending on a few things. It first depends on your character. Some people are just much more engaged leaders, A-type personalities, and others are much more followers, not so being, but more doing, or rather following. So character has a lot to do with it. Culture has a lot to do with it. Culture, what do I mean of that? This culture does not deal well with death because this culture doesn't want to face death. We are living in a culture that wants to mask death. Right? We do that even in our way of you know, pushing the grief process out of our homes. Funeral homes have become now the places where grief takes place. I had my loved one at home, and if it's possible, I think everybody should have their loved one at home and they've passed away. Why is that? Because in the privacy of your home, you have the privacy to grieve. Whereas in the public funeral home, you may not have that. Now, why is funeral homes invented? Oh, they say space. Well, not necessarily space. It's because it's much pushed away. I think it has a psychological adverse response by pushing it away out of your house rather than having it in your house. We don't have a culture of preparing ourselves to death. When I visited my grandma, Miles, when I was your age, she really shocked me when she says, yeah, in that closet, she says to me, Arnold, that's where my death garment is laying already. Because you know, grandma's going to die soon. She's 70, 72, she's not doing well. But she's living in that and talking about it as if this is a normal. He says, you know, someday you're going to die too, young man. Yeah, I'm 7, 8 years old. Now, she lives with that awareness, but it was also part of that. Death has become, in our culture, something that people don't face well. Now, we don't even bury people anymore. Yeah, the last couple of funerals in Kalamazoo, we haven't even been at the gravesite. I object every time I hear it. There's a little funeral place on the cemetery. That's where you have a little committing service. and then the funeral, there's the rest. I object. I don't think it's right. That's not burial. That's psychologically not helpful. Because now we're not facing the reality of it. So again, our culture doesn't... Preparation? The preparation on this grief journey, for example, if you've gone to a subject like this, if you have done some reading on it, even if you are not in the very grief, you will be helped to deal with it. Of course, faith is a big factor, right? If I have a faith in God, and I have that anchor of hope, and I have the anchor that the sovereignty of God is leading my life in the ultimate wisdom. Now, that doesn't always answer all the questions. Far from it. But people who have faith, strong faith, do better in every aspect of life. You know, people who have faith, they heal better after surgery. That's statistically proven. Now, if that's true for surgery, it's certainly also true for this, for emotional and the painful losses. The gift of faith is a tremendous gift in that sense as well. But please, nobody grieves alike. I have gone through my journey, and I've gone with many other people through their journey, and I think I've never met anybody who grieves the same way, the same pace, with the same intensity, coming over the journey. I'm still counseling my brother in the Netherlands, my brother in the ministry, remember Reverend Tavis's wife. I think his journey of grief is entirely different than mine. Even though he's a man of strong faith, tremendous faith, but just his own personality, his own situation makes it so different than what I have. But what are the common aspects? Now, look at these five on the first one. The very most common one, six aspects, is denial. I'm sure, Kay, you can remember it. We live for a while in the denial of the truth, don't we? We just ignore, don't want to believe it's really happening. Everybody has that. I actually believe that denial is a gift by God because it's kind of like a shock. It helps you to cope for a while with the immense changes. Yeah, in your case, I believe she was a denial there too, to not accept the fact of the sickness. And so it can also be afterwards, and especially that is the case, of course, if the death is sudden. The denial that Kay, and in some way I did also experience, was in the preparatory towards the death. But somewhere in this journey of grief is a denial in which we just don't want to face the fact. Now, anger. Common grief reaction. We all ask the why me question. And that can be very strong, especially the unfair, the unreasonable observation. I'm not at all too proud to admit that I often was angry with God when he was taking my wife away. Angry with the fact that here I'm trying to serve him and walk in his ways and do what's right, and here that's what he's doing. So anger is very common, and when anger, of course, is not dealt with well, it can turn into bitterness. That can turn become really, really destructive. And one of the things I want to encourage people is, look, if you're angry, you need to also in a proper way deal with it. Don't deny it. If you've been angry, it needs to come out. I did it by writing my journal. I have in the outline a whole beautiful aspect on journaling. And my way of expressing my anger feelings was journaling, writing. Often became a writing to God about myself and about my feelings. And that was one way to just deal with it. Now, depression. I don't have to obviously add any more to that. The loss of hope, loss of initiative, the feeling useless and burdened. I know that, for example, in your case, Kay Bryan struggled with a lot of depression, right? Useless. I'm just useless. I can do nothing. Everybody around me is doing everything. Yeah, I'm sitting in my chair and doing nothing. I heard him say that so often. So that's a depression. And normally, but now as you are facing the grief afterwards, yes, you're also dealing with depression. You feel absolutely no initiative. You just feel so tired. And that's a reaction again. Sadness. Obviously so overwhelmingly that it fills you from day to night. Then comes the acceptance phase and the submission phase. We're working out of the journey eventually. I just added the word guilt. And you say, well, that's a little bit late, isn't it? Guilt? No. Sometimes guilt is experienced at this point when you struggle with the feelings of, can I move on? Is it right to move on? Is it right for me to reinvest? Is it not a denial of my love I had to the loved one? Or is it not a forgetting of the child or forgetting of the spouse when I begin to move on? And then a guilt feeling can be experienced. It's, of course, it's irrational, but I'm only saying it is there. It can be there. Yeah, and these feelings can sometimes be so inhibitive that people are not moving on. There are some other effects experienced. There's a nice outline here about common things that I give you along that are also experienced in physical ways. I just wrote them down here for you. There are definitely physical aspects to the grief journey. What are they? Extreme exhaustion, especially if it has been a long journey that then ends in the death. Now, it's only after that you're going to deal with the extreme exhaustion. I'm not talking about extreme, just so tired. That's because you've been pushing for maybe weeks or months. There's some physical pain sometimes, headaches, sleeplessness or excessive sleep, loss of appetite or extreme eating or, you know, there's all kinds of physical things. Now, the emotional effects, again, just look at the list, how many different angles there are in the emotional effects. And I don't think I have to answer any of them. They are pretty well understood words. But maybe this helps you to see that grief is quite a journey. Now, the second or last part of the topic tonight is, what can I do to help those who go through grief? Yeah, I've given you here about 7-8 points, and I'd walk you through those real brief. Most people do not need a counselor. I did not need a counselor. I needed a friend. A friend who I can just be honest with. I had a friend like that. That was my dear brother John in Kalamazoo. Day or night, I could just talk to that guy and I could say anything I thought, even though it was totally wrong and totally not right to think. But I needed a friend like that I could just be friend with and be open with. I didn't need a counselor. You know, you do the counselors, you can tell you the counselors everything you want to say to him or her, because that's what the counselor is. Well, you need to pay for those. And why are there so many counselors today? Because they're not our friends. Exactly. Our lives are so busy, and yes, it does make good money, Kay. But that's not why it is. But oftentimes, a counselor, the increase of counselors in our society is simply because there are not enough good friends anymore. We're all so busy, and we don't feel we want to invest the time, because count on it, to walk with the griever is an investment of time. And you're not on your timetable, you're on their timetable. But yeah, we all have our agendas, we have so much to do, right? So we quickly listen, and the telephone goes on too long, we are finding ways to cut it short, and the next time we say, oh, I better wait for a couple of weeks before I call again, right? Am I painting a familiar picture? And that's why these people who are going through this journey are needing counselors. Now, of course, I believe the counselors are necessary for the extreme cases, but not for the most normal cases. You need a friend, a caring environment. And so Albert Camus, I don't know where that quote came from, but it came from Albert Camus, obviously. Don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Walk beside me, just be my friend. Now, secondly, be understanding of your friend. Each situation, each loss, each person is unique. And there is nothing worse you can do than compare your friend to somebody else you know. My case is absolutely different than, for example, here with Kay. I mean, I was home with 5 young children. I was a young father at the beginning of my life, in a demanding ministry place, position, losing my wife after, you know, 2 years battle of cancer. I cannot compare myself with what Kay goes through right now and what her children go through. Even though we both have gone through a loss of a spouse, and even though cancer was involved, our situations are radically different. Our personalities are radically different. So never compare the people with other people. Everyone is unique. And please keep in mind that there is in every case not just two sides, there are hundreds of sides and dimensions. So don't say to these people, I understand what you're going through. Now, in some way, I understand what Kay goes through, but I don't understand everything what Kay goes through. So I shouldn't be saying that I understand everything that you go through. I don't. I've never been in her shoes. I don't live the journey that you have lived and that other people live, even though I may have some commonness to it. I've heard of another person who went through that, what you are going through, dot, dot, dot. Now, what do you think those dot, dot, dots are telling you? You got to be like them, or it will go like that. That's comparing, and that's putting an incredible pressure on the mourner to perform. And that's not what you want to do. You want to give them the freedom to mourn. Thirdly, be aware that the support persons are vital. You remember this triangle? This loss or growth site? In this titty, tippity, when you're on this point, it is the support system of family, of a church family, of friends, that's really important for the griever. To allow them to grow towards the positive side. For after the initial shock, each person is going to face the reality. And so when we hear statements, yeah, I'm doing fine. Yep, I'm doing great. After a catastrophic loss of a child or a spouse, and I'm hearing a statement, yeah, I'm doing just great. Now, what's that person saying?
Help.
Huh?
Help.
But it doesn't want to say that, right? Because that sounds weak. And because everybody in our environment is telling me I'm supposed to do well and I'm supposed to do great, so I'm just going to say I'm doing great. That's a smokescreen. Because nobody who goes through loss is doing great. We're all going to notice that someday. No matter what you think, how you're going to react, you just don't know. This is what, you know, what C.S. Lewis says, I wish somebody would have told me how hard it is to lose a loved one. Well, nobody can tell you. Until you go through it, and then you're torn apart, just literally torn apart. And that feeling and that experience, you don't know. So, therefore, be aware, if someone just says, I'm doing great, you obviously know they're either dodging the pain or don't want to or don't dare to come out. Let me just look at my notes here so I don't speak too much of repetition. You know, there comes a point that the person that is seeking to go to this journey needs to realize, they need to realize they come to intersections that they have to choose to go to the left or to the right. You know, think about this triangle again. There's choices to be made. There's choices of moving on, choices that are radical choices, that maybe change the living situation of the person that has now changed too. So adjustments need to be made to deal with that. And in those moments, the mourner really needs to know there are people I can go through who I can also entrust my confusion to, that I can just trust that when I share with them something, it stays there. I cannot emphasize it enough. If Kay shares something with me and I gossip around about that, what's that going to happen the next time in Kay's here and I call Kay? What are you going to do? If I gossip about what you tell me, well, you better. Well, what else are you going to do? That's right, you won't tell me anything anymore. Now, do we think that we have a gossip problem in our life? Yes. We have a huge gossip problem. It's the worst problem in any church, really, but in every church, I should say. But in the situations where someone is confiding in you, especially things that are rather personal or that are rather chaotic or painful, they need to know, I can trust it goes nowhere. than the ear I just put it in. That's a friend. And that's what the griever needs, especially when they're struggling to make these very important decisions that they need to make together. Now, number D. One of you came up to me already with this question. What should I do when I meet the person where the loss has taken place? Shall I avoid the subject? Shall I just not talk about it? Shall I just pretend that, you know, nothing has happened? What do you think? It's too painful to bring it up. It's more painful not to bring it up. Yeah? So do not think that when you go to meet a mourner who you know just something bad has happened in their life and you don't ask about it. When you ask about it, you're giving them recognition, you're giving them a feeling, yeah, this was a big loss, it's safe to talk. If you don't ask, it's not safe to talk, and the mourner will not talk unless he feels it's safe to talk. So you initiate the conversation. Yeah, how do you initiate the conversation? Well, yeah, there's of course no one way to do it, but if you don't know the person, you can ask, can you show me a picture of him or her? And they're glad to show you lots of pictures. Because pictures is the only connection, and they'll look at pictures all the time. If they're not in their mind, they're out all over the place. So just show me a picture. Oh, wow. What was he like? Ask questions about him, her. The person. Tell me the story. What exactly happened? You say, well, why do I want to open that wound up again? Do I want to rip all that wound up? Yeah, exactly. You're not ripping up the wound. This goes on inside the whole day. It's so nice to be able to get it out here. That's what you're doing. You're not ripping open the wound. You're actually helping to heal the wound by allowing the griever to share the story. And yeah, as a pastor, I hear stories, and of course, don't take me that, I hear stories over and over and over and over. And I want to hear about Brian. And Kay will tell me now, of course, now she knows. She's not going to do it anymore, but... I still remember the people that called me, it's about a month after I buried Melanie, and they talked to me about church things and this and that, never asked about my wife. You know what I felt like doing? Shit! Throw that hook down. That hurts so much when people don't ask that. Now, what might have been the reason that they didn't ask? One, I don't want to upset him. Two, I don't have time. Because if you ask the question, be prepared to sit. And here we go again, our agendas, and we rush here, and we rush there, we don't take the time. So be careful. When you are going to call and you ask a question, make sure you have some time. But grieving people need to know that their grief is safe to grieve. And I remember my uncle Harp, he had a tragic suicide in his family. His youngest son committed suicide. And he told me that story after my wife passed away. He called me because, of course, we had some commonality now. And he said, you know, there was one young man he will never forget that came to visit him in his house. He was a friend of my cousin. And he was from Suriname, South America, black boy. He says, he came into my house. He sat next to me on the couch. He put his arm around me. He just cried. He just wept, cried with me. Didn't say anything, just wept. And so I just miss Hoop. I miss Hoop, that was his name. And he just squeezed my shoulder one more time and he got up and he left. And he says, there was none of the visitors who'd helped me so much in my grief journey as that boy did, who just wept with me. I'll never forget that. The others, he says, they came with all kinds of stories and advice and didn't want to hear any of it. Isn't that a beautiful story? We think we need to be experts, we need to have all the answers for the people that grieve. No, all they need is empathy. Someone to hold them, as it were, and to live with them and to share with them the grief and to let them cry. And of course, my uncle cried right along with him. You can imagine that. Now, be there, number E, be there mostly to listen. And not to fill it with your speaking. Why is that so important? I always say there's three lessons, or there are three rules for those who are in counseling, and that's listen and...
And listen,
that's right, it's listening. And if you're a counselor, you get listening and you get paid for it. No, not really. But listening is so important, and it's also so difficult. Right? Real listening is extremely tiring. Not just listening, but real listening, that you are walking along and try to understand the thoughts and try to walk right along with the person's story. My friend, there is nothing more difficult and exhausting than an hour of that. Now, that's what you need to do when you grieve. When you're with a griever, someone that goes through a loss, part of my pastoral work is to listen to the story as well as to let the story go. And the griever, he is constantly reliving the story. He dreams, or she dreams about it, wakes up with it, goes to bed with it, gets to work, comes out of work. There it is. It's like a CD in a continuous play. And they want to talk. They really want to talk. And they need someone to listen to them. Now, the story doesn't make sense. There are holes in the story. It may be backwards and frontwards. It doesn't really matter. All you want to do is listen. And I would encourage active listening. What is active listening? Is that just... Yeah, that would be terrible. And if you now start to struggle with sleep, there's also nothing wrong to admit that. And say, you know what, I'm getting really sleepy. Can I get up for a moment and walk around? I want to listen to you, but it's tiring at the moment that I'm getting tired. So, but active listening is not just falling asleep. Active listening is restating once in a while what the person is saying in your own words. Not to add to it, not to judge it, not to correct them, but simply say, I heard you say that, right? And now the person knows you are listening. Either you misunderstood him, or you did understand. And now you encourage them to share more. That's a very important skill with anyone that you ever deal with, not only with grievers. Active listening. Avoid the worn-out cliches, right? I'm sure we could come up with a list of 50 of those. But you know what I mean with cliches. Yeah, I just had one. What was it? You know what I mean. That's a cliche. You didn't even pick that up. You don't know what I mean at all. I know exactly what you're going through. Good thing to say? Of course not. I mean, you see, you know, someone who's really going through grief and has a leadership position or an older child, you must be really strong now for your mother. Good thing to say? Bad thing to say. Put a guy on a guilt trip. Kid is not ready to do that. Nobody's ready to do that. Or make sure you count your blessings, okay? Because there's still many blessings. I'm sure there are many blessings left, but we're not counting any blessings at this moment. Were you at that stage? You were looking at that loss all the time. That's all you see, that loss. Can't count blessings. So don't say these cliches. Oh yeah, remember, this is God's will. Now, of course, this is God's will, and He will give us grace to handle this. And I'm sure He may also give His people grace to handle it. But these are cliches that really are not meaningful at that moment. But yeah, what else do I say then? Well, just this, you know, I really don't know what to say, but I hear you. That's much better. Just say, I really have no words. I don't know what to say. But thanks for sharing what you shared with me. See, now you're giving the person the feeling, look, you've listened, you're no expert, you really know how to help them either, and you have helped them, actually. How have you helped them? Just by caring, by listening, by giving the space. Sharing memories about loved ones. Especially good for children, of course, but really good for anyone. If you have memories of the person, don't hesitate to share them. Yeah, that's painful. No, that's not painful. Well, it is painful, but it's also so beautiful to share nice memories of the person you've had. Words they said, things they said, things they did can become a treasury. You know, after my wife died about 2 months after that, I put a whole photo album together of her, me, and the kids growing up. Now, I did it for my kids, of course, because they were not going to remember Melanie after a few years. So it was a very painful thing to do. I have to say that every page was a crying page because all these memories came back and I had to write in between the photos to get the memories back again so that my kids... Now, that was the favorite book for many years. It's still the favorite book, right? I mean, Joshua just came over from New Zealand. He asked me for that book again. Now, he's a married man now. He's pacing through it all and reading all the comments again and just going to that same book again. Because these are memories of treasuries. So please don't memories you have of loved ones. Avoid the mourner privacy, yet be there for them. That's a difficult one. They need their privacy. They have their own little sanctuary, I would say, in which they withdraw. And then they are alone. And yet they must know that they're never alone. That you're always there for them. And that you're ready to listen to them. So that's a hard one to define. Yeah, a mourner craves companionship, often feels lonely, and sometimes they just want to be alone. Am I correct about that? It's a tug of war in the person himself, so it's not always easy for us to know either. But know those two lines. Be supportive, but watch for overdependence. What I mean by supportive... don't say, you know, if I can do anything for you, let me know. What will happen? Nothing. But if somebody would say, look, I'm coming to clean your toilets tomorrow. Okay, now we are around the target. That's what was needed. I'm not going to ask him to do that for me. Right? Or, look, I am coming and I'd like to take you out to do the groceries. Would you like me? Go along to do the groceries. Yeah, or be specific in your offer. And obviously this means replace yourself in the person's foods. Try to imagine what it must be like, what they must go through. And that's specific. And that's more helpful than just, giving these generalizations. But of course you have to be careful that not to become over-dependent. What I mean is over-dependent, that some people will lean on you forever and ever and ever. And again, they need to. Yeah? You may have to say to the mourner, look, I know that you like me to help you with this again, but now tomorrow I am not going to be here. Let's see if you can do it yourself. I'm going to give you a call at 10 o'clock and see if it gets done. Yeah, there's issues like that that need to be done. The mourner needs to get back on his own feet or her own feet to do those things. If children are involved... We like to help these families with children, so I'll take your children for a couple of days. Don't. Please. Leave the kids where they need to be. Kids like the normal routines much better than being placed out and farmed out in all kinds of places. Little kids like routines that's safety for them. So if you have children that are grieving, they want the same expectation, same responsibilities. Yes, the homework may be skipped for one day, but not for 10 days. Yeah, it's okay for this time not to eat your breakfast, but not tomorrow. Yeah, be routine, same discipline, same punishments, same expectations, as quick as possible. Why is that so important? That gives kids much more security again. For them, when a loved one falls away, it's all insecurity. Now, the last statement is, remember that grief is never over. It erupts less often. I already mentioned that. Let's read that poem in the back page, and then we have some question and answers yet. I love this poem. I have often shared it with others. I need to talk about my loss. I may often need to tell you what happened, or to ask you why it happened. But that does not mean you have to answer that question, because you can't always. Each time I discuss my loss, I'm helping myself face the reality of the death of my loved one. I need to know that you care about me, I need to feel your touch, your hugs. I need you just to be with me, and I need to be with you. I need to know you believe in me and in my ability to get through my grief in my own way and in my own time. Please don't judge me now or think that I am behaving strangely. Remember, I'm grieving. I may even be in shock. I may feel afraid. I may feel deep rage. I may even feel guilty, but above all, I hurt. I'm experiencing pain unlike any I've ever felt before. Don't worry if you think I'm getting better and then suddenly I seem to slip backward. Grief makes me behave this way at times. And please don't tell me to get on with my life. I'm probably already saying this to myself. What I need most is time to grieve and recover at my pace. Most of all, thank you for being my friend. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your caring. Thank you for helping, for understanding. Thank you for praying with me. Remember, in the days or years ahead, after your loss, when you need me as I've needed you, I will understand, and then I'll come and be with you. Now, this is, in a very short way, the whole summary of our topic tonight, wasn't it? Obviously written by a griever, and has put all those little strings together that I've tried to take a little bit out of here and talk with you about it. Any questions? We have some time for that. I didn't want to make it too late, so I've condensed this topic that actually was a two-night topic much more, but I feel like this was much more general and maybe just as useful for us. Any questions? Okay, you know, one of the statements that often helped me is a statement also by a griever who said the way to reach the light and to walk in the light is not to chase the setting sun, like running west, you know, trying to get up and catch up with what is going, and to try to live in the light that is setting in the west. But he says the best way to reach the light is to face the darkness and go east, and to plunge into the darkness and to face it, because the light will be on the other side. Now that's a beautiful statement. I think that you never catch it when you go west. You'll always run out. It all runs away from you. But when we face Easter, we go to the darkness, we face the loss, we deal with it, it will eventually become light. I've used the example before, and I think Kay will remember it. You know, grief is like you think of your backyard, and you have this beautiful, magnificent oak tree growing there in the backyard. It kind of dominates the scene of your backyard because it's just standing there in the center of it all. Death is when that tree is cut down. That whole yard is no more the yard that you ever saw it was, wasn't it? That tree is gone. Every time you look out of any window in the house, wherever you are, that tree is gone and you see the empty place. What's left? That's a stump. That stump will always be there the rest of your life. But what's going to happen as the griever is going to deal with this backyard? First, it's going to be barren. It's just a stump. That's all they see. That's all they see. That's all they see. But eventually, they're going to replant that backyard. And I had a little bush here, a little tree there, a little flower there, a little this, a little that. Yeah, so over the years, this backyard begins to fill up. But what's still there? A stump. And we're always there. But I am going to landscape around the stump. And my life will always be with the stump in my life. Yeah? That's the grief journey. And be aware of it, that the person who had this loss will always see that stump on various angles wherever they walk. You may not see the stump, because you see it kind of overgrown now with bushes, and they know what's under there. And that's the stump. Shall we close with prayer? Faithful and merciful God, we thank Thee we've had opportunity tonight to just think through various aspects of the journey of grief and loss and pain. Lord, some of us have gone through this journey. I have remembered some of these common themes that we have touched on tonight. Others are going through it. And we all will someday experience it in a closer or more personal way. Please prepare us. Also with this awareness of the subject. And enable us, Lord, to help others who walk around us with grief and sorrow in their lives. And above all, Lord, wilt thou give that we may have also the biblical perspective and a hope in our hearts. As Paul writes to the Thessalonians, we mourn not as those who have no hope. And Lord, that is also indeed the privilege of those among us who are grieving at the moment. But please wilt thou give us all that hope and guide us now as we go further this evening, bring us safely home again. And we ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, I have a little handout here with a few helpful handouts, and there's a lot I took out, so don't look at the letters and say, oh, I'm missing a whole bunch of them. Yes, you're missing a whole bunch of them. But I think these are the most helpful for you and me, just as we are going through journeys ourselves or others that they'll go journey. So, I don't know how many, if I have not enough, let me know. I'll make a few more and I'll make them available. 19? So how many do we have? Not quite 19, right? Okay, well, maybe some of you can